Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, September the 4th, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is Cynthia Gustafson. Today's session number is GUC 2001-2. The title of her presentation is Through the Waters. Let's listen to Cynthia.
My whole life, to get through all those things that I've gone through my whole life, and now I use it with other people in physical therapy as well. This week, this is designed to have poetry to help you understand your spirituality. How can poetry help us get to a different place than we've been before? Yesterday, we talked about God calls your name in Charlton Whispers through the wind, which, and I used the word ruach, which is the Hebrew word for wind, but it also means breath, it also means spirit, the Holy Spirit. So that's what we talked about yesterday. Today, if we look at the scripture, it says, "Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you." And so today's subject is through the waters. How do we hear God calling you in shouts and whispers through the water? And my interpretation of that for today is I'm using that metaphorically as the waters of birth and baptism. So we're going to be talking about family. How does God call us through a family? What I have on the screen up here is something by William Carlos Williams. By the way, he's the one who wrote the little Red Wheelbarrow poem. Says, "It's difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there." If you think about that for a minute, William Carlos Williams was also a physician, and he thought that poetry was equally as important to people's health as his medicine was. So that's just general. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how God calls our name through our families. I've got some poems that I'm going to be showing you that are all based on my family and my family experience, but I hope that ignites in you some maybe deep feelings about your families. Let me ask you a question before I start with the poem. How does the way you see God depend on the family that you grew up in?
If you had a father to be afraid of, you would have a God you would.
Let me turn this off for a second because this is... Okay, now tell me.
I think if you had a father you were afraid of, you'd have a God you were afraid of.
Very good. Now, I wasn't looking for anything that deep.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was just thinking, if your parents were Lutheran...
You probably were Lutheran.
You may be Lutheran now. Okay. Or you may see God through the same kind of lens that your family saw God through, because that's what we were taught. Now, that's not true with everyone, but...
Or if you had a father who dropped you off for Sunday school and went with his friends to drink coffee and visit and was not a particularly church-going person, then as you grew older and you met a man that you married who was very religiously based in his family and had gone to a Christian college, you probably felt more likely to become Lutheran than stay Methodist.
Right. So sometimes what our family does influences us to do what the family did, and sometimes what the family does influences us to do something different because we didn't like what that was.
And it wasn't a particular dislike for that, but I think it probably, subconsciously influenced me. I mean, I just felt that because my husband had a much sounder base, more religious background than I did, that I'd feel more comfortable there than he would with me.
Right, right. And getting back to your comment, that is really very, very good comment, because the way we see God
really does depend on the way we see the power of people in our own lives. You know, if we are taught our whole lives, as in the Lord's Prayer, Our Father, you know, and we only hear male terms for God, and your father, I mean, not necessarily yours, but a person's father was a very stern, stern father, that's going to be our image, isn't it? That's if everything is automatic. I mean, you know, if we start thinking about things and re-examining all that, it doesn't necessarily need to be that way, but that's what would be automatic, probably. Okay. Turn this back on for a second. This is a poem I wrote. Yes, this is the one. This is called Catbird. Oh, and again, for those that you weren't here yesterday, let me show you my two books. This particular poem comes out of this book, which didn't arrive, so it's not here. You can't get it. But it is in publication. It's called Inversing Your Life, a poetry workbook for self-discovery and healing. And this particular poem is in this book. This book has 50 of my poems on one page, and on the opposite page, each poem is a way for a person to write their own about that particular subject. This particular one is about family and family origins. Catford, 1609C. The science man waits. He says Catbird 1609C will fly into the net at the center left of the right quadrant at 4:30 today, as it does every year in its migration north. I laugh, not because I don't believe, but because I've always known. My grandmother has walked into Cannon Valley Church every Sunday at 9:30 for nearly 92 years, knelt in the soil of her rose bed on the first crisp days of May, gathered her garden raspberries by the 19th of July. Mother, too, knows her place, under the trees her hands planted half century ago, trees that shade her farm, their arms surrounding spring fiddleheads of fern, wild ginger, foam flowers, and deep-growing bloodroot. The science man waits. Could this be the year Catbird 1609C does not come? But either death or choice does not follow the river north to the same meadows and nest? Grandmother prunes roses. Mother waters wildflowers. The science man knows when his birds will arrive, within seconds of time and milliliters of space. While I laugh and move to the city, placing my belongings in a car full of cardboard boxes, leaking black soil from slips of lily and tiny plants of strawberry that will grow to be ever-bearing. Now, I should say to you that this is based on a real experience in Minnesota on the St. Croix River. My husband and I were canoeing on the river one day, and we met this scientist on the side of the river, and he had a net across, and he was catching the birds. And he said, I know when any particular bird is going to hit this net and which quadrant of the net it's going to hit and at what time. And I just sat there, you know, gassed. I couldn't believe it. But the migrations are that timed. You know, the birds know. And so what this poem is doing is trying to look at that and thinking, how much of that do we do? You know, how much of us is kind of programmed like that, and how much of us isn't? And let's think of that in terms of our spirituality and our understanding of who God is. What was programmed in us in very early years, and what is it that we can change? You see, at the very end I say, I'm moving, but the strawberries I have are ever-bearing, aren't they? You know, I know there's something about that word that says, you're not going to change. You know, we have control of you. But anyway, what do you think about those kinds of things? When you think back on your mother, your grandmother, did their lives change very much from what they were taught when they were younger?
Not as much as ours as normal.
Right. I mean, I'm getting pretty old too. A lot of things.
Right. And think about the generations after you, your children, your grandchildren. Where are they going with their thoughts?
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do you hear your mother's voice when you speak to your children? Oh. Or see your mother's expression in the mirror when you look at them?
Yes, I think we all do.
I mean, my mother used to say she would see her mother in the mirror, and I thought, my mother's seeing things, the apparitions, but that wasn't what she was saying at all.
She saw it in her own face.
Yeah.
Right.
This doesn't have anything to do with my spirituality, but this was an experience I had just yesterday when we were hanging up laundry. Right. Because I was going to hang up the sheets the way I was taught how to hang them up, the fold on the bottom. And the lady next to me, maybe it wasn't you.
No.
But you're supposed to put, drape them over the line, because that's the way they do it here. And my immediate reaction was almost, well, you know, almost anger. For a split second. And then, of course, and that came to me, you know.
Okay.
How programmed we are. And yeah, well, this is stupid. You
know? Yeah. Then you can't lean inside the sheet and smell how it's
not right. So, but you know, now translate that into your spiritual life or into your beliefs. And how many of those beliefs have been changed during your adult life? You know, how many are still as you were when you were a child and what you were programmed? Mm-hmm. And what have we chosen or taught ourselves or learned from our life, you know, that has changed those beliefs?
I think a lot of that, like with the services, church services, you hear so many people say, I only like the tradition. I don't want to go to the, you know, the bluegrass or the, you know, you just have that church coming up. And it's hard for a lot
and
of people.
How good it feels to sing those old hymns.
Right.
In the summer when they take out the gospel hymn, a lot of people in Oklahoma, they just wait all year for the gospel hymns in the summer. Yeah. Right. Okay, well, let me go to this next one. This next poem is called Four Generations of Women. And it's about my grandmother, my mother, myself, and my daughter. And what is passed on and what isn't passed on. Again, this is from my green book. Four Generations of Women. Grandma, before I start this, I bet most of you know this anyway, but those two up there don't. This talks about knitting. And when you're knitting something, if you knit in another color, you have to pass the other. Are you guys knitters? Anybody knitter here? You have to hold the second color behind. And if you knit too tightly, it gets all puckered, because you know you're knitting with one color, but you're pulling this other string behind, this other yarn behind. And if you pull it, you know, too tightly, the thing ends up like this. Instead of nice and loose. Oh, you have to know that for the poem. Okay. Four Generations of Women. Grandma Ann's nimble hands wove yarn into sweaters the old country way. No wrist movement. You see it there better. No wrist movement. Yarn caught and held by taut fingers. She wove it tightly, smoothly, always her pattern in mind, knitting together the sometimes opposite twists for cable or ribbing. We learned it her way. My mother chose not to knit. Oops, here we go. Used her fingers and fingernails to fashion hair. Her pattern always in mind, combing together the sometimes opposite twists for braid and roll. I knit a little, try to avoid my hair, but write poems tightly, smoothly, always my pattern in mind, twisting words into braids, cables, sometimes warm as Icelandic wool, sometimes snarled and broken. My daughter, too, has learned to knit in a smooth, wristless fashion, but her pulling is tight, and her color pattern sweaters buckle beneath the weight of yarns carried behind. Okay, so what am I saying about the four generations here? Is there anything that
even if we don't do what our mother or parents do, we still have that tendency to do whatever we do in the same way.
Right. There's something carried through, isn't it? Right. The tendency. This is my German relative, Grandma Ann, and you just did it your way. You just did everybody, and that, you know, that no matter what it is that we did was done her way. And you picked that up. But then down at the end, this is the, you know, hitch and ride. Her color pattern sweaters buckle beneath the weight of yarns carried behind. What is it talking about? What is she carrying?
Three generations.
All of those generations. Right. And what we've learned from all those generations, whether it be good or bad. Okay. And again, now if you talk about this in terms of spirituality, again, it's the same thing, isn't it? That we carry all those generations, those of us, you know, who had grandfathers that were ministers or whatever, you know, we carry that weight. I have a soon-to-be son-in-law whose parents are both missionary kids who grew up in Africa, and his grandparents were very, very strict, old-style ministers. And this particular son-in-law is an atheist. He won't even look at religion. That's what he carries, you know, from the generations. And it's very sad. I mean, I'd like to take a scissors and snip that little thread, you know. But I can't do it. I mean, he's got to do that somehow. But how about you? Can any of you think, is there anything passed on spiritually or religious, you know, religious tradition that is either helpful or not helpful to you? Can any of you think of anything like that?
Well, I think you just have to take what you want out of the traditions and apply it to your own life, and then add in what you've learned from other people and make it your own.
Yes.
And when your children learn that, then they'll have a deeper understanding and a deeper faith.
Right.
What did your daughter think of that?
She's not much different than he is.
Oh.
No. No. Again, why?
doesn't it make you wonder then why?
Oh, well, hers came from a different place. I know where his came from. Hers came from a place where there was, I think it was from a certain minister that we had who really was not a model of the Christian person, and it really turned her. Really did. That plus science. And I think she could get over the science part of it if she hadn't been really turned off by that particular minister.
But why, when it's a minister that affects a young person that way, there are other people that are not perfect either, but they don't.
Right. Well, it's very difficult for us to, you know, go into somebody else's skin and figure out exactly, you know, why. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that we need to think about too is that nobody is finished. You know, none of us are finished. Right. And so, I don't know how, you know, else to answer that. Do you have anything to add to that, Kat? This is my son up here. He knows my daughter too. We're both perplexed. Okay. Let me.
Since your talk was to be about water and baptism, we have a clergy friend whose son was not in the faith, and he said he always comforted himself by knowing that that son was baptized. That, like you say, God isn't done. His hand is on it.
That's interesting. You know, just last night I heard the most interesting story, and I won't tell you who said it. It was somebody in the community here. But she said her father was Jewish and her mother was Catholic. And so the kids were all raised Catholic. And of course they were taught that their father was going to burn in hell because he was Jewish. And on his deathbed, which was just a few years ago, her brother went up to him and said, "Dad, I know I'm going to see you in heaven."
And Dad didn't say anything. And so he said again, Dad, I know I'm going to see you in heaven. He said it three times. And Dad looked at him and said, still sounds like a bunch of bull to me. It was just so interesting. Yes, yes. But then she finished by saying, you know, that night when my dad was sleeping in the hospital, my mom went and baptized him. And so I thought that was very interesting.
Did he know then?
No, he didn't know.
He didn't
know.
I've heard of another case like that where the daughter married somebody else and who was not, you know, that believed in baptism. But the mother took the baby when they were gone, so and she has baptized that child.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that lay people can do baptisms.
Yeah.
Yes. My husband is a pediatrician and has baptized many, many infants before they died. He used to work in a Catholic hospital, and they asked him to do that. He said, if the nuns weren't around, you know, this is up to you. Even though he wasn't Catholic, they said, it's all right, you know how to do it, you do it.
I just never thought of that until she told me that, and I thought,
Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? Okay, next one I want to put on here for you is, this is a very personal poem for me. This is about my sister and the relationship I've had with my sister. This is ultimately what I would call a forgiveness poem. She and I really, I think, hated maybe too simple a word, hated each other growing up. Just absolutely, we really disliked one another so much. We were less than 2 years apart that I decided to have my children 7 years apart. I mean, I read that was a conscious effort that I would never have children that hated one another as much as my sister and I did. And so this poem was a poem that I wrote as an adult trying to look back on their relationship and reframe it in a different way. So this is my forgiveness poem. And by the way, when my book got published, it was going to be in the book and I knew my sister would read it. So I sent it to her first, and she sent me back the best letter, and she said, oh, it was great. I could write a better one about you. So it's wonderful. Anyway, her name is Roxanne. It's called Roxanne. Let's see. Let's start over here. Okay. As we walked Amelia Island Beach after your daughter's wedding, we took turns jumping moss-covered boulders as if we were playing checkers 40 years ago on the checkerboard stamped into the linoleum floor of our room. You took the bottom bunk. I had to climb to sleep, but despite the height, I felt safer there because the field mice I heard each night scratching in the wall would find you first. When Mother made us matching dresses, I, being smaller, would get yours after it was faded, mine already thrown away, then I'd wear yours another year later. When there was no family money for clothes, we took your babysitting cash on a bus to the city and bought a wardrobe to fit you. I'd turn up the sleeves of your sweaters, roll and pin your skirt waists, and drown in your blouses whose darts fell flat on my non-existent breasts. You dictated the order of my wearing, but I didn't mind. I felt like a modern woman in the style and color of the day, until you went away to college and cleaned out the closet. It was a good trade, losing clothes for getting rid of you. No more biting, hitting, lying to get what I had. She wouldn't do that, Mother always said. So I learned to be silent. Even when you took my friend, I never understood why we couldn't have been three, but no, you said no. I always go the wrong direction. There we go. That's when I decided I had to do it all better. No matter what you did, I bettered it. You got a B, I got an A. You acted in a play, I directed one. You got to regionals, I went to state. You attended a state college, mine was private with scholarship. You were beautiful, I was smart. You were musical, I was literate. And then I forgot you, no longer needing to put you down in order to survive. I remembered you only as a springboard that lifted my jumps higher than expected. But today, at Heather's wedding, when you entered the room and everyone stared at us because
you living in Florida and I from Minnesota each wore the same dress. This is true. This is true, Dad. I remembered it was you who taught me style. You who had shared your clothes with me for too many years. You who I'd played checkers with in look-alike pajamas on the linoleum. Later, as we walked the beach in our dresses, remarking how rare it is to find a good friend and wishing not to let 7 years pass again, the waves retreating from the sand whispered like the soft scratch of field mice in a familiar wall. So, how about sibling rivalry? Any of you had it?
I was the oldest, so I was always with.
So you were charged.
I got there first.
Do you mind?
Oh, sure.
Of course. And you know, the interesting thing is part of this reconciliation with my sister was my being the younger sister having to realize how difficult it had been for her being the older one. That she did have to do everything first. That she had to convince my mother every time we wanted to do something new, and that she was the icebreaker, all those, you know, and that it wasn't easy for her. And I always just, you know, envied her being older and all of that. But so, you know, depending on what place you were in the family, they each had their own problems.
Right.
How about any of the rest of you? Are there unresolved? Think of extended families. I don't know how much it's going on now, but boy, in my mother's generation, my mother had cousins who, when she was little, she saw, and then all of a sudden she never saw them again the rest of her life because her mother cut them out of the family. You know, because I think one of them married a Catholic is what happened. You know, and all of a sudden they weren't part of the family anymore. They were just gone. But there were all kinds of, I mean, as I talked to my mother, in her generation, my goodness, there were all these family feuds, just unbelievable family feuds, and people who just did not reconcile even to the day they died. Does that sound familiar in any of your families?
I thought that was a really nice poem, and it seemed like you were normal sisters that
we
did
are
normal
now.
Sister things.
Yeah. Oh, you mean it sounded like that?
Well, that's what the poem sounded like.
Yeah.
I don't know what you
yeah.
was like.
Well, I could have made it sound a lot worse. But I didn't. Yeah.
Right.
No. No, we really did have a terrible rivalry, I think, when we were younger. And really one of the blessings of growing older is that now when I see my sister, we are so alike. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like I used to think
dresses to the wedding.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, even as far as politics and who we like and who we don't like, and just very, very similar, which is very interesting to me because I would not have guessed that growing up. I was going to say this family feud business. Again, it's kind of like those dirty little secrets that you don't find out until really later. My father died when I was 13, and he had never gotten along with his dad. My father was a professional organist who played in the big bands in the 30s and 40s, and then in nightclubs, and my grandfather wanted him to play in churches, and therefore they didn't talk. And my father died when I was very young, and my grandfather did not come to the funeral. And 1 year after my father was buried, my grandfather went to my father's grave and had a heart attack at the grave and died.
Mm.
This is the kind of family I come from. I mean, real, you know, just, you know, the fact that my father would not play organ in the church and he played in nightclubs where they had alcohol kept my grandfather from talking to my father for years and wouldn't allow him to go to his grave, you know, or to his funeral. You know. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that, you know, that I'm talking about here in this poem, and how do we overcome that? How do we get to the point of forgiveness and to say, this is crazy, you know, you are family, and how do we?
Age and maturity does a lot of that.
Right.
I mean, my sisters and I were never, we were
6 and 7 years apart. And my next younger sister, 6 years younger than them. And my youngest sister, 11 years younger than me. And we were really never close growing up. I mean, they were tag-alongs.
Yeah.
And it was after our parents died that we really became close.
Uh-huh.
Especially after our mother died.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, then we were family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I think it takes a major event, like an accident or something,
yeah,
to make people
come together.
Uh-huh. Come together, change their minds about it.
Yeah, things like that.
It's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could take.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Too soon, old, too late, smart.
That's right. That's great. Okay. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to play this, put this one on next. This is kind of a silly little one, but this one shows the difference in generations, parents and kids. Ring of love beads. In 68, we let our hair grow long, bangled love beads over peasant blouses thin enough to spy both skin and shadow. We knew they didn't give peace a chance, hadn't loved anything but money, didn't know our kind of love, the kind you cannot buy with commercial smiles or money earned from their military-industrial complex. Dads threw us out while mothers cried. We tried our best and sent cash and letters signed, I love you. It would never happen to our children, given time and talk, books instead of guns, not even sticks to aim. But they shave their heads, tattoo thigh roses, hang rings from their noses, and use our language to aim sharp words shot straight as arrows into the target of our ecological wellness complex. Can't party on baked potato chips, can't get rich writing letters or reading books. I send cash for therapy and leave messages on email. Did best I could. Love you, Mom. So you've got three generations here. You know, the generation that didn't like the 60s, the old bad generation, the 60s generation, and now the younger generation, and the difference between the three, and how do we cross those boundaries? And actually, if we're thinking about spirituality and the way we see God, how do these three different generations see God differently because of the way we look, you know, through because of the lens we look through? These kids down here who are living on email, you know, that's a huge way that they relate to people, to friends, on email, wear tattoos, have rings in their noses, all those kinds of things. Are they going to relate to the church services that we Lutherans have on most Sunday mornings? Let's talk about that. Turn this off so we can hear.
If they want to. No, yep. Really, because my kids have shaved their heads and had tattoos, and it's never really been a big thing for me because I figured they'd grow out of it.
Uh-huh.
So I never got excited about it. And
yep.
One of them is very faithful about going to church, and one, he'll get there someday.
Yeah.
Perhaps it makes a difference as to when they were small, their attitude was toward going to church, and their friends' attitudes toward going to church, and their teachers.
Yeah. Let me ask Ina, back there. How about music? Do you, as a music director, change the music in your services to adapt to the different generations? How do you relate to that?
This is one of the greatest challenges going on right now.
Right.
And I don't know what the answer is. I wish so often that I were somehow able to get outside and get a bigger view.
Yeah.
Because from, you know, at one point there are young people in the largest team choir we've ever had who only want to sing really good music from all generations.
Uh-huh.
Which doesn't jive then with the theory that young people today only want their kind of music, if you could just figure out what that was.
Right.
I don't know the answer. We try to offer a wider range. I think we do walk a thin line if we only offer a very, very narrow, you know, this is what we've always had and you
right.
will like it.
Right. Youth directors make a big difference. Oh. You've got an excellent youth director.
They do.
It makes all the world a difference.
Right. Now, I know at our church in Tulsa, we have a music director who is very, very good. She's a wonderful organist, and she loves classical music, and she will use folk music in the service, but she does not like the new, what we call praise music. My tastes go along with her tastes, so I like going to that church, but there are lots of young people who only want to go and hear, well, what the choir did on Sunday night, the black choir. I can't think of their
urban rhythms.
Yeah.
The only problem with going only one way is that you may, in fact, then have a generation who have never heard anything else.
Right.
Who joined in at age 15 to 25 and only did praise music, they never know anything else. And right. Praise music may not carry the weight for the long term, but they have no other
right
background to choose from.
Yeah. The other part of that is that praise music only has one theological view, which is celebration. And that does not cover, the whole story. Yeah, right. Do the young people want to add anything here? No. No. Kent is a musician. What do you think about trying to have music for the different generations in the service?
I think it's really important.
Important.
It's important, I think, to see. I like the old LGW hymns, personally. But that's just what I was brought up in. I think it's good to steep kids in good four-part chorales.
Familiar and comfortable.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'll remember, like, Children of the Heavenly Father, the melody, until I die, probably. I think it's good to instill that kind of heritage in kids.
I was sitting next to somebody, actually a friend of Kent's, the other night at church, and it was the night that we had a hymnal. Is it called Glory?
That awful thing.
Yeah, I think it's called Glory.
Oh, Gather.
Anyway,
Gather.
Every single
Gather.
Song.
Gather.
Gather. Gather. Gather. Mm-hmm. Every single song in the hymnal was just a melody. There were no harmonies written. And Micah stood next to me and says, "This is so boring. All we can sing are melodies." And I absolutely agree with them. By the end of the night, I was so tired of just looking at just melodies, I could not do any harmonies.
But I was very surprised without them.
Oh, if you know how to do it, but I don't. I have to read it. I cannot harmonize without it being written there. Oh, I wish I could harmonize without it being written, but I can't.
I think the should word, which is not a good word, but if people in general would be just a little bit more open to anything. Mm-hmm. And that way churches could offer a variety of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's nice to be exposed to something different. And yeah, I don't like something new right away, but, you know, once
you... It grows on you.
Well, sure. And I like the variety. I love going to these worship services. They're different all the time, and I just love it. Wow. But I wouldn't like that all the time, mm-hmm. you know. So I think it's our attitude that's a little...
Right. Well, here's another poem. This one again is from my green book. And I'm just putting this here because I don't know how these got so dirty. Anyway, I wanted you to think about, these are all metaphors for home. This is very simple. If I send you away from here asking you to, you know, go in your quiet time and write something, this is a very easy kind of a poem to write. Think of a subject, and then they say, whatever that is, and just one metaphor after another, like this, my home. Now, the reason it's a really good kind of a poem is because you can really cover all the different aspects of something this way by doing one metaphor after another. We'll talk about more after I read it. You'll get the idea. My home. My home is an October harvest moon rising silently in the dark night. My home is a cinnamon stick adding flavor to bland juices.
My home is a fireplace, sometimes warm and cozy, sometimes burning with rage. My home is a crow surviving the northern winter by cawing at the wind. My home is a cumulus cloud on a summer's afternoon. My home is the only oak left in the savanna. My home is the silky outline of an imagined dream. My home is a pet needing food and discipline. My home is a pile of sticks at risk for the big bad wolf. My home is the aurora borealis, usually quiet, but glowing in splendor when sunspots erupt. My home is a swallow's nest, deeply knitted and swaying in the breeze. So here you can see a home is such a complicated thing where we feel a great deal of love, but sometimes we feel rage. Sometimes we feel that we're alone there. Sometimes it is the place where we feel the most comfortable and the best. But a home represents all of those things. You could write a poem like this about my faith, my church, my understanding of God, my God is. This is a real easy way to start if you want to start writing poetry, or even if you've been writing it a lot. It's an easy way to take a subject and just think about all the different aspects of it. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. All of those different things. Can anybody think of any other metaphors we could add here? My home is.
Home is a gathering place of all. I've touched me along the way.
Right.
My home is a haven.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. So you could even use this topic and do my home, you know, if you wanted to write. So, but anyway, that's a kind of a fun kind of poem to write.
My home is a pot stirred by children coming back home after growing community.
That is, isn't it? Like a soup that's filled with all kinds of things in it that you didn't really expect. Oh, okay, here's one. I knew I had one here and I couldn't find it. Okay, this is the last poem I'm going to show today. This is a poem that I wrote on the anniversary of when my grandmother would have been 100 years old. She died at age 90, I can't remember if it was 94 or 96, because she chose to. She stopped eating. And all of her friends, all of her second ring of friends had died. And she was tired. And she just decided that this was it. This was the end. Her neighbor, who this is interesting, her neighbor who was male, who had been taking care of her, the outside of her home for her, you know, when she needed something, and she had been taking care of his flowers for many, many years. When he died, that was the end. She just didn't want to live any longer. So she called all of her children and grandchildren to her bedside. She got the doctor, by the way, to say he wouldn't feed her. And she called all of her children and grandchildren together, and she said, "Goodbye, I'm dying now." You know, and we all said goodbye, and she died. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But this is my grandmother, who was in control of everything her whole life. Well, she was also in control of her dad.
That made sense.
Yes.
How interesting. Long did it take?
Oh, it was just a few days, I think, and they had her on water. And it was in the hospital.
Cool. Yeah,
she was in the hospital. So this is, it's called I Can Hear You Laughing, because on the anniversary of her death, I actually heard my grandmother laughing. And it wasn't until I heard that laugh that I started thinking, what day is it today? And I realized it was her birthday. It was just unbelievable. Anyway, it's called I Can Hear You Laughing, on the anniversary of my grandmother's 100th birthday. This birth month, April, never brought you laughter. Spring meant long days of hoeing and planting, sowing for Easter, filling pots and bowls of food for teams of hired men, tired, hungry from working and warming newly thawed earth. You could have celebrated with us today, cheered and sung, but you chose to stop eating 4 years ago, said farewell to your children, great and great grand, to doctors, to your garden of strawberries, bloodroot, and your window wall of violets. If you were here today, I know you would shush the singing, recork the bottle, accept only gifts of flowers and food, and we would remark how your longevity is due to hard work, no pampering, and oatmeal every morning. In today's thaw, I cannot stay inside. My window of violets pales at the fire of Azalea Hills in this Oklahoma town. Alongside redbud and dogwood, their blossoms light and lovely as the baby blankets you quilted from leftover flannel. Can you see these southern flowers through my eyes? Blooms that never flourished in your garden? As Minnesota cold denied the growth of these flowers, your northern chill negated frivolous life. I hear your voice, your laughter. How could it be laughter? You never laughed. But I hear it plain, and now again, I stare at crimson tulips, bulbs transported on vessels from overseas, blooming in this foreign soil. Like your mother, who survived the tall ship journey, your laughter navigates across the expanse of time. And I understand how it is possible to transplant joy to one another on this day in April, a day of budding. This is really interesting. The, you know, what I inherited from my grandmother is severity and work. I mean, that's, those are the two things, you know. There's no time for laughter, there's only time for work and more work.
And you feel guilty.
And too much fun. Yes, yes. I mean, this was definitely this grandmother. But for some reason, on her 100th birthday, I heard her laughing. And I sat there and I thought, she must have laughed in my childhood, or I wouldn't have recognized it now. So she must have laughed, but I don't ever remember when it was. Maybe when she was picking flowers or something. But then I got this idea that she had never seen any of these beautiful southern flowers, the dogwoods and azaleas. My grandmother never got out of Minnesota. Yeah, she never saw any of these flowers. Well, I think she saw an azalea plant on Easter, maybe, you know, from the florist. She never saw it blooming outside. And I was wondering, you know, could she see these flowers through her eyes? And was that why she was laughing? And I start, you know, I start asking some questions here about spirituality, you know, and how am I different than my grandma? And how am I the same? And, you know, if she were still alive and she came down to Oklahoma and she saw those flowers, would she be different? You know, when she was up north and cold and stiff. And it was interesting. Bernice is my husband's mother, and it's funny because the first time my husband ever met my grandmother, my husband Ed grew up in a family that hugs one another. I grew up in a family that does not touch anybody. And Ed went immediately up to my grandmother and gave her a hug.
Oh.
it was very strange, and she just went like this, you know. But he didn't stop. I mean, every time he saw her, he would hug her, and she got to the point where he was the only person that she would let hug him. Hug her. It was very touching, actually.
I wonder, too, if she was different with her friends or with, like, this man next door, that, or if she could have had some of this come out with somebody like that rather than her, where she felt in the family she had to
responsible
hold the line. You know,
yeah, I wonder.
I grew up in the same household with my paternal grandparents and my parents and my two sisters. My grandmother had no sense of humor that I ever remember. But I was always told that, and I think you know, I feel like I have a sense of humor. I think maybe consciously I decided I wasn't going to be like that.
Uh-huh. Right. And I think this gets back to what we started talking about in the very beginning, which is sometimes we take exactly what our families role model for us. And sometimes we look at our families and say, that's not what we want. We want something very different. Mm-hmm. And then we start looking around where we can find that. And that is what we can do as adults. As children, we're kind of stuck with what, you know, what we're given. But as we get older, we have these choices. And who we become spiritually really does a lot depend on these choices. And if you, you know, if we grow up with something that doesn't really agree with us and we never look around for anything else, then we're kind of stuck. You know, kind of stuck. And so I guess what I'm, you know, what I'm suggesting today is that we need to look around. We are adults, and what doesn't fit us, we need to look around and check on. And what I would suggest for you, because I, you know, I would like you to go off and find a quiet place and do some writing, if you would. I'm not taking time within the sessions for writing, but if you want to go off and do some writing, think of this. Does my family, either my family when I was growing up or my current family, bring me closer to God, closer to spirit, you know, in some way? Or does it drive me away? Because there are families which do both of those. And then maybe there are times when our family does help and times when our family doesn't. So maybe it's not that easy to tell. But you could start with this line. You could say, my family tree is withering, or my family tree is thriving. And think of it that way. I didn't even ask in the beginning, how many of you write poetry at all? Anybody? Oh, goodness. Well, I hope I get you to start. It's a great way to start thinking about things that maybe you've wanted to think about, but you just didn't know how to start thinking about it. When I get stuck on something emotionally, you know, and I'm just stuck there, and I just can't seem to move one way or another, I write what's called a prose poem. Now, this is something that anybody can do. Any of you can do this. A prose poem is really a poem that looks like a paragraph. You know, doesn't have any rhyme. You know, doesn't have any rhythm, anything like that. You start writing a long sentence, and actually it turns out it should be like one long sentence in a paragraph. You don't even put periods there. You just put a comma and keep going, and a comma and keep going and keep going. And it's like you just get all this stuff out. But if you start writing about something and you keep writing and you won't let yourself stop writing, by the end of that long paragraph, you're probably going to know something about yourself that you didn't know before. And then the other thing that I want to say is, don't think that you have to publish any of your stuff. Okay? Writing poetry is important just for the writing of it, just for yourself. You know, if you end up getting really good at it, publish it, that's fine. But what I'm saying is, write some stuff for yourself. And, you know, the more you write, the more it'll get easier. And I think you'll find some things out about yourself that you didn't know. Poetry, writing poetry is a little bit like dreams. It brings information from your unconscious or your subconscious out into the open. And that's why you find things out about yourself when you write that you wouldn't otherwise. Anybody have any questions? Tomorrow we're going to be talking about, Through the Fire. So it will be, how do we discover God through adversity, you know, when we're walking through the fire? And the scripture says, you know, you will walk through the fire and you will not be burned. What does that mean? And if some of us feel that there have been times when we have walked through fire and we have been burned, how does that relate also to who we are as Christians? So that will be tomorrow. End of session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.